And we are once again recording at 9:16. Dr. King, you're free to move forward.
Thank you. So we have before us an informal hearing for a case number 2117 Breland Lane PT. Before we go into case details, I do have some information and sort of rules that I want to make sure that we talk about for the informal hearing. Mr. Lane on the call?
He has indicated multiple times that he would be here. He has been on this call and popped in a couple of times.
While you were in executive session, he asked, and I said it wouldn't start before 9 o'clock, but that was my only instruction to him. Mm. And that was right as you went into executive session.
Okay. I know that he popped in moments ago when we were talking with Mr. Gibson.
Do you want me to try him, Judy? Do you want me to call him really quick?
Sure, why not?
I think we should. Mm-hmm. And then while you're doing that, I'm just curious if Mr. Sloan is on the call.
I am.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sloan.
He'll join us here in a second.
Thank you, Veronica.
My pleasure.
It appears that Mr. Lane has joined us.
Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Lane.
Good morning.
So we're calling before us an informal hearing for case number 2117, Breland Lane, PT. Judy, would you please roll call?
I will do that. Professional member and board president, Dr. King?
Present.
Professional member and board vice president, Dr. Bustillo?
Present.
Professional member and secretary, Mr. Leone.
Present.
Professional member, Dr. Hike.
Present.
Public member, Mr. Greer.
Present.
Public member, Mr. Barton.
Here.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Lane, would you briefly introduce yourself, please?
Yes, Breland Lane, physical therapist in Arizona. I graduated in 2008. I practiced in Idaho college.
Mr. Lane, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I will give you an opportunity to make an opening statement. We're not quite there yet, though.
Oh, just name. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. And then Mr. Sloan is on the call as well. And then are you represented by any counsel, Mr. Lane?
No.
Thank you. All right. So, Mr. Lane, Ms. Sloan, members of the board, this interview is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions. Issue a decree of censure, place the restrictions on the licensee's practice, issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500, issue other disciplinary actions, or issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of specific continuing education. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious enough to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board statutes or rules, the case may be dismissed. If, however, the board finds that the violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of the license or certificate, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. At this time, Judy, do you want to swear in the witnesses?
Yes, Mr. Lane and Ms. Richardson, Mr. Sloan, please hold up your hand and do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Let the record show Mr. Lane, Mr. Sloan, and Ms. Richardson all affirmatively responded to the swearing in.
Thank you. So the order of this, Mr. Lane, will be that Mindy Richardson, our investigator, will give us an overview of the case. Then you'll have an opportunity to make an opening statement. And then we will ask you some questions and then move into deliberation after that. Okay?
Thank you. Yes.
All right. So, Ms. Richardson, would you please give us an overview of the complaint?
Yep. Good morning, members of the board. Complaint 2117 was filed by a physical therapist assistant, Mr. Sloan, who was working under general supervision of Mr. Lane. The setting in which they were practicing was home health, and the population that they were treating were medically complex pediatric patients. The ages was from toddlers to young adults in general. The PTA alleged that Mr. Lane did not supervise him according to our regulatory requirements, and that Mr. Lane's care was clinically substandard. The investigation revealed additional potential violations that were reviewed by this board at Mr. Lane's initial review in August. The issues for the board to consider, some of the issues to consider in this matter, are that all of the PTAs were working under general supervision with medically complex patients. In the complainant's case, based on his interview, Mr. Sloan in this matter, he had limited experience with this specific patient population, and Mr. Lane did not specifically verify this PTA's experience or credentials to treat before he delegated the treatment. So did Mr. Lane ensure that the treatment provided by this PTA was safe, effective, and efficient, and that all support staff were qualified to treat these types of patients? Another issue is that on each date of service and based on the patient acuity, did Mr. Lane determine that it was appropriate for a PTA to treat the patient? The medical record review substantiates that Mr. Lane's assessments and plans of care did not meet regulatory requirements as stated in the investigative report and would not allow another care provider to assume care. This is particularly apparent with the deficiencies identified in his initial evaluations and plans of care, and especially when the physical therapist assistants were assuming that care. PTAs were allowed to create and modify treatment plans routinely, and many patients were not reassessed by Mr. Lane every fourth visit in person as required by regulations. Some of these patients were virtually seen using telemedicine at their fourth visit. Mr. Lane believed that this was allowed per the telehealth regulation. In your review material, you received resources which referenced the telehealth statutes, the emergency orders, and so what happened is that we had emergency orders, a series of three from the governor. He rescinded those, and in lieu of that rescinding of that, he produced the actual statutes. And I would refer you to 36-3603 in our statutes. This article applies to which states? This article applies to the practice of telehealth within this state. This article does not expand, reduce, or otherwise amend the healthcare provider licensing requirements of Title 32 under which we practice. Mr. Lane did receive a copy of the investigative report prior to his initial review and provided a written response for the board's consideration, which you also have in your review materials. Would you like me to reiterate the statutes and rules that the board adopted at the initial review?
No.
Record? The board adopted the following violations for consideration. ARS 32-2044, engaging in the performance of substandard care by physical therapists due to deliberate or negligent act or failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. ARS 32-2044-6, failing to supervise assistive personnel, physical therapy students, or interim permit holders in accordance with this chapter and rules. ARS 32-2044-12, failing to adhere to recognized standards of ethics of the physical therapy profession, specifically 4.2. The supervising physical therapist has primary responsibility for the physical therapy care rendered to a patient slash client. ARS 32-2044-12, failing to maintain adequate patient records. R424-303, patient care management, B.2. On each date of service, a physical therapist shall determine, based on the patient's acuity and treatment plan, whether it is appropriate to use assistive personnel to perform a selected treatment intervention or physical therapy task for the patient. R424-303, patient care management as well. A physical therapist who provides general supervision for a physical therapist assistant shall, under E, before delegating performance of a selected physical therapy intervention or physical therapy task to assistive personnel working under general or on-site supervision, the supervising physical therapist shall ensure that the assistive personnel is qualified by education or training to perform the selected physical therapy intervention or physical therapy task in a safe, effective, and efficient manner. Under patient care management, R424-303 as well, F.4, perform a reevaluation and provide each therapeutic intervention for the patient that is done on the day of the reevaluation every fourth treatment visit or every 30 days, whichever comes first. And finally, R424-304, adequate patient records, A.3.E, enable another physical therapist to assume the patient's care at any point in the course of the therapeutic intervention. That concludes my briefing.
Dr. King, you're muted.
Thank you. It was really loud in my hallway. Mr. Lame, would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes. I learned a lot through this process thus far, for sure. There were a lot of areas in Ms. Richardson's report that I agreed with, and I have changed since to improve my practice. Several areas I didn't, but on the whole, I would have done things differently. I definitely would have worked harder to make Mr. Sloan feel more supported and give him the assistance that he was asking for. I did attempt to help, but I should have done a better job. I feel like I outlined a lot of this in the record or in the rebuttal I submitted. But on the whole, I would have done things differently and worked harder to help Mr. Sloan.
I'm assuming that you are okay to answer questions from the board?
Yes.
Okay. And then, Mr. Sloan, at some point, are you open to answering questions from the board?
I am.
Thank you. Okay. Board members, do you have any questions for Mr. Lane?
Hi, Mr. Lane. This is Karen Bustillo. Can you tell us how you've changed your practice since this complaint has come about?
Yes. The main areas are more communication with my PTAs that I'm working with. We have almost daily conferences on patients. Prior, it was kind of the beginning of the week. We'd round on the patients, and then if things needed to be addressed during the week, I would be available for the PTAs. But now we block out time each day to discuss patients. And we don't miss any supervisions, and we, any questions or concerns or problems that might arise. Definitely more detailed in my documentations, SOAP notes, daily notes, and my evaluations, doing more objective measures. I have a PTA that I have recently started working with, and prior to working with her, definitely more in-depth interview on her background with this population, any concerns she had, ways she liked to communicate. So definitely more talking prior to agreeing to work with her and verifying her skill set and her abilities. definitely something I wish I would have done with Mr. Sloan more. I didn't have a good enough grasp on the Practice Act to realize I should have done that. These are the main ways. I would say documentation and communication with PTAs are the main ways I've changed practice since starting this process.
Mr. Lane, this is John Hike, and I have a question in terms of your communication and what you just described in terms of what you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
In what I've read, I believe that you've never met Mr. Sloan in face-to-face. Are you meeting besides text messages and video conferences with the PTAs that you are now working with?
Yes, we meet at a monthly meeting. I don't meet with them in person weekly, but I have met and had them shadow me, and I've shadowed each of them at several sessions face-to-face, but it is not a face-to-face meeting weekly. It is on the phone. The conferences are on the phone each week, and then a lot of text messaging, but we definitely speak on the phone. But I don't meet with them face-to-face weekly. Monthly, yes, but not weekly.
Great, thank you.
Mr. Lane, it's Kelly King. I have a few questions for you, and they're going to go down two kind of different paths because I think we have two pretty significant issues to talk with you about. One is certainly supervision.
Mm-hmm.
The other, though, is practicing in pediatrics and your practice and some of your practice styles and your evaluations and plans of care and whatnot. So let's start a little bit with supervision.
Okay.
Are you talking every day and actually delegating to your PTA every day, every patient?
Well, we talk every day and we go over who she's seeing, who they're seeing, any questions. So yes, we speak of every patient she sees that I also share every day. Yeah.
Okay. And documenting delegation of that patient to that PTA every day?
It's documented in the schedule. There's a little area to say talked about such and such. It's not in their note, which would be a good place to put it, but it's documented in our system that we speak and talk about patients every day.
Okay. In your opening statement, you mentioned that you learned a lot, that the one thing that you probably would have done more is just support the PTA more. Is that the only thing you've learned about supervision from this process with you?
No, definitely meeting with the PTA prior to any delegation of patients and seeing where their strengths and weaknesses are, what areas they need more help with or are more knowledgeable than myself as far as sharing information. That also, like we said, a lot more frequent communication. Definitely would change in my evaluations, adding at least basic interventions to begin with, which I wasn't doing, which I definitely am now and wish I would have done prior. All the PTAs I had worked with prior to that just would look over the evaluation, see the deficits, see the areas that we want to work on, look at goals, and just kind of construct some interventions to do. So I guess I took that for granted that they would just do that because they did. But I definitely have changed that way of thinking.
So you're saying that now when you evaluate someone, you're writing a plan of care and a treatment plan?
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't doing that before?
No, it was a plan of care, goals, deficiencies, areas of weakness, but I wasn't writing exact interventions and exercises and therapeutic activities and balance exercises to do specifically.
Okay. Are you doing face-to-face in-home assessments every fourth visit now?
as much as I can, I get in the home.
Maybe tell me a little more about that, as much as you can.
Sometimes it is a telehealth. I wasn't able to find anywhere that prohibited it, and my employers are still insisting that it's allowable, that the governor wants us to do this, that the DDD encourages it. I guess I'm still confused on how it's not an acceptable practice. So I'm on the same page as everyone and doing it correctly, any supervision over telehealth is not permissible. Is that correct?
Well, let me ask you this. With the guidelines being that you have to reassess and reevaluate every fourth visit or so, how do you do that on telehealth? What does that look like for you?
Usually mom runs them through goals and interventions. I prefer to have a PTA there so she can be a skilled set of hands, or he can be a skilled set of hands to do what I'm asking or want to see. But it looks like me coaching and cueing mom on how to let me see what the goals look like, wherever they may be, and then the interventions that we want to do that session as well. And then talking with mom and the kiddo about progress or not progress, or things that they might want to change, or any concerns that they may have.
So specifically, if you provided a manual muscle test or some sort of standardized assessment on your evaluation, how would you reassess that through telehealth on your fourth visit?
Yep. So manual muscle tests, we try not to do any telehealth because, it's not going to work. Any range of motion or manual muscle test, you can't do that over telehealth. Some standardized tests are able, if it's timed and like a tug or something where you can set it up, you can do pretty well. My preferred method is definitely not to do it. I would prefer not to do it.
If you're doing the supervised telehealth for the PTA's fourth visit or whatnot, are you both billing for the session, the PTA and you?
No, and I'm not 100% on how the office does it, but I believe that the PTA, that they eat the costs of the PTA, and that I'm the only one that is billed or paid for that session. That anytime a PTA is involved in a supervisory, that the company doesn't profit from the PTA.
Okay. Before we go into practice and questions around that, I want to make sure that, does the board have any other questions for Mr. Lane on supervision of the PTA?
I mean, the only thing that I would say, just because it sounds like there's still a little confusion from Mr. Lane as far as, what the supervisory visit is supposed to entail. So, there's nothing in the, if I review, we have a rule under R424303. And then if you look at letter F, number 4, it says the physical therapist, if they're providing general supervision, must perform a reevaluation and provide each therapeutic intervention for the patient that is done on the day of the reevaluation, every fourth treatment visit or every 30 days, whichever occurs first. So you're right, there's nothing preventing you from doing that via telehealth, mm-hmm. but you are required to perform every treatment intervention with that patient on that, that supervisory visit. So having a PTA in the home with that patient, providing those treatments as you kind of like delegate it or, supervise it, whatever, wouldn't technically be met under that rule within our practice act. So definitely something to keep in mind moving forward in regard to that. So I don't telehealth.
Yes. Will you give me that again? I'd like to bring this back to the company.
Yeah, it's rule. So it's R424303, okay. Which is under patient care management. And then under that rule, that section would be section F.
Section F.
Number 4.
And, okay. Thank you.
It is one of the allegations that it's part of your informal hearing as well, Mr. Lane.
Okay.
So what does your date, you said that you talked to the PTA most days and then it was every day. And fourth visit, you try to make it out there. How do you write your quarterly progress notes? Because DDD requires a quarterly progress note that it actually page 6 of the DDD policies states absolutely has to be a reevaluation with updated goals and plan of care. So if you're not seeing the patient, how does that go for you?
So if I never write a progress note on a patient I haven't seen. The way the company allocates it, they want us to, whoever the last PT was to see the patient is kind of responsible for that quarterly report for whatever quarter it is. My goal and my, as best I can, I want to be in the home doing it. But if I'm not the last person to have seen that patient, so I might have seen it and then a PTA might have gone twice and I write the quarterly report, I'll look over those reports. I will talk to the PTA, you know, any progress made or not made. And then I do my best to write the quarterly report with the information I have. But yes, I'm not always the last one to have seen the patient prior to the report.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're asking the PTA to assess whether the patient's made progress.
Yeah.
Okay. And then writing a report based on that.
Yeah, and based on the knowledge I have with the patient.
Okay. I don't want to dominate the time. Does anyone else have questions? I have a few more, but I can certainly come back to them.
This is Karen Bustillo again. What's your daily average caseload?
It varies between 5 and 7 at the most. Okay. But never more than 7. You can get, depending on cancellations, down to 3, 4.
And how often typically do you see your average patient per month?
Once a week, so 4 to 5 weeks, 4 or 5 times.
All
right. Twice.
And how long have you been with this company?
2 years, coming up on 2 years. Remember exactly.
And did you pediatrics prior to joining this home health group?
Very limited, but for the most part, no.
Okay. So what did you do to upgrade your education to work with this population?
Mostly spoke with the existing therapists there, got their tricks and tips and things that they did. I called several friends that I have that are therapists, pediatric therapists, and picked their brains, asked them things. I read several chapters in the pediatric books I have. And I looked over a couple modules on a MedBridge continuing education that I had. But yeah, mainly talking with other therapists who are experienced with pediatrics and getting their advice.
What did you do over the last 2 years for your continuing competence?
Well, I just got my license again, or re-upped it. Mm-hmm. So it was in services, and then it was online modules.
Through MedBridge?
Through therapy.com. I had a MedBridge.
Okay.
I had a MedBridge membership prior to the company that I was looking at, but the one through the company is physicaltherapy.com.
Thank you.
I'll just to expand on Dr. Bustillo's question. In your materials, Mr. Lane had submitted a list of the CEUs that he had taken at the time that he submitted it. He may have taken more since then, but that was listed as Exhibit 15, and that's page 470 of your materials.
I have taken one continuing course since then, and it was a PTA PT supervisory module just on rules and regulations and how to be better with that.
Mr. Lane, this is Mr. Greer.
Hello.
Did you count the CEUs that you took as part of your renewal requirements, your recent renewal requirement?
Yes.
Also, in your opening statement, you said you agreed with a lot of Ms. Richardson's report. What parts of the report did you agree with?
I agreed lacking objective data, special tests. I did not do enough to address home exercise programs. I did not do a good enough job talking with Mr. Sloan prior to having him see patients and making sure he was capable and comfortable. I didn't do enough when he reached out for more help and assistance. What else? I agreed that I definitely should have been constructing a flow chart or a set of exercises with evaluations, more detailed evaluations, more detail given to making sure there were no fourth visits missed. I think that's all I can think of off the top of my head.
And then what's other parts that you disagreed with?
Well, so some of the fourth visits missed were telehealth visits. So technically, I saw these patients via telehealth, and I guess I'm still unsure on whether that is totally off the table or not. I mean, I'll do whatever the board says to do. So some of those were telehealth fourth visits. I thought several of her critiques on the evaluations were not 100% correct. I felt like I did test several areas and that they weren't as detailed as they could be, but they were good enough to, for another clinician to assume care of the patient. That's probably the main areas that I would disagree.
You said some of the fourth visits were telehealth. Were there some of the fourth visits that weren't made?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Not good enough communication with PTA and myself. So some were in-person visits that were routinely in-person that were missed. And that's sometimes due to cancellations from the parent or patient. And then it can be difficult to keep track, but it's not an excuse that, they were missed in person.
I appreciate your candor. I really do.
Mr. Lane, is there a specific reason why you would choose a telehealth visit over physically seeing particularly a pediatric patient who typically change pretty frequently? Is there a reason that telehealth would be your preference over a physical visit with the patient?
No, it would never be my preference. I don't like to do them as infrequently as I possibly can. Generally, it's only because of location. They're in Cottonwood or Tucson, or there's a PTA that works down there, and she's not able to get a PT in the home, so she needs, or he needs, a telehealth supervision so they can continue to see the patient. I don't prefer telehealth, and I would not do it at all if I could.
Are there any patients on your caseload or the PTA that you're supervising that are located within 25 miles of you right now?
Yes.
And are those also patients that you would do telehealth with on the fourth visit?
Let me think. Yes, there are two that I do telehealth, and they are within 25 miles.
Thank you.
Two, I believe.
I did have a question just in terms of kind of the practice of the company you work for, Mr. Lane. So I was reviewing some of the information you gave in here regarding how the care was being done with several of the patients. And for one of the patients, you had written on here, let me find it. I performed the patient's PT evaluation on 2/9/21, after which his regular weekly PT sessions were given to a PTA. I perform a supervisory visit on 6/8/21 and 7/13/21. When you say it was given to a PTA, is that you delegating it to the PTA, or is that the company assigning it to the PTA on the schedule? Like, can you kind of clarify what that means?
Yes, no problem. That was not great wording. So for myself, I can't speak to the other therapists. I let the scheduler know whether the patient is appropriate for a PTA or not. If I want to keep the patient or they're a little too medically complex, then I keep the patient. Otherwise, I say, yeah, this could go to whoever PTA it might be.
Okay. So it's more so you delegating to the PTA based off your comfort level with their skill set, but then the scheduler is the one scheduling them to those patients for whatever.
Yeah, depending on the area. Like I might do an evaluation for a PTA in an area that I don't cover. So I would know what PTA that person might be going to. So I wouldn't delegate that if I thought that they weren't fairly manageable for a skill set of a PTA.
Okay. And that actually kind of leads into my next question. So do you typically, when you do an eval on a patient, are those the only patients you see? Or is there also where you might see patients that another PT evaluated? Do other PTs see patients that you potentially evaluated to where maybe they're doing the supervisory visit? Just because some of the dates on some of these patients, the supervisory visits obviously seem very spread out. Yes. I know you mentioned that there was obviously some visits being missed for those supervisory visits, but I'm also kind of curious, are other PTs potentially doing those as well?
Mm-hmm. Typically, I would keep the patients that I evaluate, and it would be me and my PTA working with those patients. But yes, if someone's on vacation or they're not able to cover, then you can do a supervisor visit for a patient you didn't do the evaluation on and don't see regularly.
Okay. And then is there ever a time where a PTA that maybe you don't normally work with is going to be under your supervision for any reason? Where that kind of needs to be, spoken out with that PTA that you're the one they're going to, or vice versa, PTAs that you typically work with, are there times where they're technically being supervised by another PT, mm-hmm. To ensure that things are being followed the way that they should be?
Yes. I have two PTAs that I generally work with, but yeah, I could cover for another PTA if someone's on vacation. Or like I said, if they need a supervisory visit, but the PTA is unable to for whatever reason. So yes, there are some interchange between your regular PTA and PTAs that you don't normally or regularly work with. But yeah, we definitely have places or checks and balances in place to make sure that every PTA is covered at all times by a PT.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Lane, and some of the CEUs that you took over the last licensure period, did any of them include pediatric courses? I'm having a hard time in the appendix. So I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah, they were pretty much all pediatric related.
Mm-hmm. And any of them about like developmental mm-hmm. milestones and growth and development?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'd have to look over the list again. A lot of intervention based, cerebral palsy or gait, things to look for with gait, or a lot of functional and kind of, in, in a session exercise activities. Off the top of my head, I can't remember any of that specifically talked about developmental milestones specifically.
So one of the patient charts that I read, there were lots of charts submitted for us, but one was an evaluation you did on that patient who's 15 years old. And it looked like the evaluation included bear walking, crab walking, jumping, lunging, you know, all kinds of really high level gross motor activities. Yet your findings were that he was weak and needed PT once a week. So can you just talk me through how do you come to that conclusion? It looks like that the general recommendation for most of your evaluations is PT once a week, regardless of what the findings are. And so just kind of talk me through a 15-year-old who's doing all of these things and just justifying PT for that particular patient.
It's hard to say without knowing exactly who and what, you know, what the eval found, but a lot of times I like to compare them to what they might be doing with their peers. You know, if I think of a 15-year-old who has no physical limitations and, you know, could be able to do this or that. And if they're not at that level, or if I find weakness through a muscle test or a functional movement.
It's patient AJ, to give you a reference.
AJ.
And I looked back too at the goal, and the only goal you wrote other than strengthening, although your manual muscle test was a 4-5, was catching a ball.
Only two goals? That.
So, yeah, there were three goals. One had to do with weakness. One had to do with gait, although it looks like he's jumping and bouncing everywhere. Dynamic standing balance was one of your findings. And then catching a ball. So I was having a hard time connecting functional implications to what you were evaluating for a 15-year-old in your plan of care.
Well, functionally sounds like he was on par. I imagine I wanted to get him, if I remember AJ correctly, he was into sports and wanted to play sports. And so we were working on higher level balance and agility to get him at a level where if he wanted to play on the basketball team or football team or wrestle, that he could do that.
I think my question is, did that require weekly PT, or were there other resources in the community that he could have achieved those things to be able to participate in community things versus actually requiring PT?
I don't know what he was able to participate in or not. I don't know if it was time thing, or if he didn't have the resources, or if they didn't offer those, you know, didn't offer activities that could have mimicked or helped in the same way as PT. I mean, I suppose.
Do you try to connect your patients with community resources? If his goal to play sports, would it be something that you would do to try to help the family find opportunities for that for him?
No, I mean, generally, I don't. I just don't know of a lot of organizations. I mean, that would be a good area to explore.
I guess my last statement about it, I read the notes, I read the PTA notes and things, and it sounded like he was doing really great, but your quarterly progress note for that particular patient was that he was making very slow progress and that he needed to continue weekly PT. So those sorts of things I really am having a hard time with. The dots aren't connecting for me.
I don't know. Okay.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Lane by the board? Okay, then Mr. Lane, would you like to make, I want to ask, board, do you have any questions for Mr. Sloan, who I think is still on the call potentially? Okay, hearing none. Mr. Lane, would you like to make a closing statement?
Yeah, I I love being a PT. I definitely have seen areas of weakness and areas to improve, and we're taking steps towards that. I'm proud to be a PT, and I do my best to uphold our ethics and standards. And I'm happy to do any recommendations or things that the board would suggest to improve.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So this concludes then the interview and questions process of the hearing. So at this point, the board will move into discussion and deliberation. So I ask that that discussion be allowed to happen. We won't necessarily entertain any comments or questions from here forward while we deliberate the case. Okay. Thank you. So board members, let's kind of walk through some of the allegations, I think, and just find out what your thoughts are, feelings on, or if they were substantiated. So we have quite a few of them. We don't necessarily have to go through every single one of them, but the ARS 32-2044. I guess I would just ask, let me pull it back up again. Do you feel like the investigative report... And I let me ask you this instead of going through each. Are there any allegations that you don't believe as a board are substantiated by the investigative report or our interview with Mr. Lane?
I think I would agree with Ms. Richardson, the 32-2044-14, the making misleading, deceptive, untrue, fraudulent representations. I don't think that there's any evidence to support that one.
Agree.
Mr. Lane was notified when he received the invitation for the informal hearing that the board at its initial review had determined that there was not enough evidence to support that. So Mr. Lane was made aware that that was not considered as part of this hearing.
I didn't think I heard it in your list, but I worried maybe I missed it.
I apologize. I should have mentioned that.
Totally fine. Totally fine.
I do believe that the rest of the allegations that were listed today pretty accurately reflect the testimony that we've heard and the seriousness of the complaints that were. That were made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, Dr. Bustillo. I think we have three pretty significant issues here: failure to follow the requirements on supervision under the gender supervision rules, failure to ensure that the PTA that's working with his patients is qualified and educated to do so, and then significant substandard care in his evaluations and plans of care and the things that he was doing with his patients or delegating to his PTAs. I think some of these, my opinion, after reading many of these charts, some of these patients were treated long after they met their goals. And I'm having a really hard time finding justification on some of them even being treated by PT at all. Progress notes don't really reflect progress. There's some that were just looked like they were copied and pasted. I think it's pretty egregious for pediatric, for a very vulnerable population of patients, honestly. Dr. Hyde, do you have any thoughts?
I agree with the statements that I've made so far, and in terms of the adequate patient records, I definitely find that there are holes, if you will, throughout the patient records in terms of plan of cares being done and being appropriate, as well as the supervision of the PTA. It also is apparent, though, that Mr. Lane has learned some in terms of these happenings. He has seemed to change some of the things, and in terms of going forward, in changing his practice.
Thank you.
I can definitely appreciate, you know, what Mr. Lane has told us in terms of what he learned, you know, changes that he's made to his practice, things of that nature. There still seems to be a little bit of, you know, a discomfort with the Practice Act and, you know, how general supervision, you know, technically should be fulfilled. You know, so I think that that's definitely something that we have to keep in mind and, you know, potentially make sure that that is handled appropriately.
And to that, to add to that, I'm not sure in terms of the scheduler, Mr. Lane described, you know, talking to the scheduler and saying which one was appropriate, which was not appropriate. But for example, going to Tucson or somewhere that's far away to see that patient, was he telling the scheduler at that point that that would be okay, that they could go ahead with that telehealth visit and have a PTA there present? Or was the scheduler making that decision? Seems like there's a disagreement between the company and Charlene.
Yeah, I think along those lines, there seems to be a little bit discrepancy of when a telehealth visit is decided upon versus an in-person, because distance doesn't necessarily seem to be the consistent factor. And so for me, that I still don't have a clear understanding of who gets chosen to be on his load versus who gets chosen to be delegated versus who gets chosen to be have an in-person eval on the fourth visit versus who gets telehealth and they see the PT once in a quarter.
Correct.
And the question I asked earlier of Mr. Lane, it sounds like he's saying that he was making the decision that was appropriate to delegate the care to a PTA. And then based off of that knowledge for those patients that he said it was appropriate, the scheduler would go ahead and schedule the PTAs that he works with there. So, I mean, as long as he's making that decision, I don't necessarily have an issue if it's with the patients that he has said that those PTAs are capable of seeing. Now, I think the issue prior to the changes that he's made was really that there was no communication happening as those PTAs were going to see those patients. It sounds like there was really no knowledge of what their background, what the PTAs' backgrounds were, how skilled they were in terms of treating that population. You know, from the sounds of it, it sounds like he's made those adjustments at this point, which, you know, I can definitely appreciate. That's happening now. But yeah, I think that that's something to keep in mind for the future as well, is it's not the scheduler who determines, you know, where people are getting scheduled to, especially PTAs. It should be the PT who does that.
And it sounds like along those same lines, Giovanni, that once you're on a PTA schedule, you're going to be, it's like one and done. You're good for the PTA, so you'll stay on the PTA. And there was a particular note where a patient had ended up in the emergency room for a couple of days, and, you know, and the discussion was, well, did PTA take a look at them and do a couple of assessments and let me know if you see anything? You know what I mean?
So yeah, they had a change in status.
They had a change in status, but they were on the PTA list, so they would be staying on the PTA list. So I think I have a problem with this delegation of, once you're delegated to the PTA, you stay with the PTA. Like, there's no reassessing of that. You're on a PTA schedule. You're cleared for that. We're going to keep you there.
In terms of assessment, but reassessment in that PTA in terms of their skills, mm-hmm. is not appropriate for them to be assessing or reassessing whether they're in status or not.
Correct, which is one of the things Mr. Lane did say, that he relies on the assessment of the PTA for the patient's progress and goals to write his progress note, which does not align with our Practice Act at all.
Yeah. And I think all of this goes back to the consistency of the fourth visit being done by the PT. You know, if that fourth visit's getting done consistently, you know, you're not having to rely on things like that.
Well, the fourth visit is actually an assessment, right? Versus just a FaceTime observing of the PTA during the
exactly. It should be a reevaluation.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any other Comments, Dr. Bustillo?
I do think it's a little bit deeper than that, however, at least from my perspective. I feel like Mr. Lane went into a new phase of his career 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of our profession, is that we can do different things throughout our professional career. But I feel like I haven't heard the embracing of this medically complex pediatric population from an educational point of view, other mm-hmm. than asking colleagues and maybe an online class. Okay, granted that, you know, he did this during, you know, the pandemic, and that was difficult for everybody. But over the past year, you know, there has been opportunity to do in-person classes and to be part of the bigger community of pediatric physical therapists that, you know, can support each other and learn from each other and things like that. And so I think some of the things that we've seen with the evaluations not being complete and the plans of care maybe being extended too long are from a less knowledgeable or less understanding of that patient population. And so I do feel like there's just some knowledge gap as well as lack of understanding of the Practice Act in terms of supervision and things like that. So, you know, not that he shouldn't be doing it, but there's ways to enhance your ability to be an effective provider.
I'm glad that you brought that up, Dr. Seo. I think that that is such a huge point that if any of us went into cervical spine and we just talked to some friends about what to do and how to do it and started practicing, it would not be okay. And pediatrics is no different. It's such a complicated patient population to so education, training, hands-on practice, mentoring, critical to successfully treating this patient population. Mm-hmm. Are there any thoughts of a motion? I will make a motion then for a disciplinary action. I'll just talk through it and then we can talk about it at a board. I'd make a motion for a board order, a disciplinary action for 3 years of probation to include CEUs around pediatric physical therapy, 12 hours, 6 hours of documentation, and a 3 hours of ethics course. I would also like to see Mr. Lane retake the jurisprudence exam. And I would also like to see his documentation monitored by an external monitoring entity for a period of time. We can discuss that as a board. Ability, of course, for early termination if he meets all of these requirements.
Dr. King, this may just more be a procedural nit, but I think we need to adopt the findings of facts and conclusions of law before we get to discipline. So
you are correct.
Is that part of your included as part of your motion?
Yeah, so the first part of my motion is adopting the findings of fact for each of the allegations that Ms. Richardson read off to us before we started the informal hearing. And conclusions of law would be the same.
Second.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Greer. Any discussion about any of those things?
I think if we're going to go with monitoring, I think it needs to be at least monitoring of 3 to 5 charts, done on a I think given the patient population every other month for four monitoring periods.
Once again, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Probably should vote.
Oh, sorry, we didn't vote. My bad.
Do we need those details before we vote, though, so we know what we're voting on?
Well, Madam Chair, members of the board, my understanding is that your motion included adopting the violations set forth in the investigative report as supported by the facts, again, set forth in the investigative report.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
And my apologies, everyone. My video cut out in the middle of all of that. Is there any way someone can kind of run through everything that was laid out?
Giovanni, the first motion was to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law that were set forth by the investigative report when we first started the hearing. And we have a second. And then the second part of the motion was 3 years of disciplinary action, 3 years of probation, 12 hours of pediatric CEUs, 6 hours of documentation, 3 hours of ethics, retaking the jurisprudence exam, and monitoring documentation. We'll decide how long and how many with the ability for early termination.
Okay, thank you.
And there's a second.
Yeah, just
and again, for the record, I just want to make sure that if you're referring to the investigative report, that based on earlier discussion, ARS 32-2044-14 will not be included.
Correct.
Right.
But what is included is R-424-303, right? All those extras that were added at the initial review.
Yes.
Thanks.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, just to be clear, the motion before you is just to adopt findings of facts and conclusions of law.
Thank
in the
you.
Board order, then there'll be a subsequent discussion on the order itself.
Thank you. There's no more discussion on the motion on findings of fact and conclusions of law. Judy, do you want to call a vote?
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the findings of facts and conclusions of law of all the violations set forth in the investigative report as supported by the facts also set forth in the investigative report with the exclusion of 32-2044-14. Mm-hmm. Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes, and I believe you were talking about the elements to include in a disciplinary action. Currently, there is not a full motion for that on the table. You're still in discussion of the terms.
So I'll make a motion of the disciplinary action to include 3 years of probation, 12 contact hours of pediatric CEU, 6 hours of documentation, 3 hours of ethics, retaking the jurisprudence, and monitoring documentation by an external monitoring entity. We suggested 3 to 5 charts every other month for 4 months. I would like it also to include an initial evaluation and progress notes. Ability to for early termination.
I'd second that.
Thanks, Giovanni. Any discussion or thoughts?
Yes.
Dr. King, the only suggestion that I might make is if we're doing monitoring every other month for 4 months, we're only monitoring 2 charts or 2 sections of charts. My inclination is actually to push that a little further.
Okay. Would you say a year, 6 months?
I think 6 months, or I think Dr. Bustillo suggested 8 months.
If oh, sorry, correctly. Karen, I thought you said 4. I'm sorry, 8
Eight. Yeah, for seven. Four times.
Four. Got you. I missed that. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Barton. Eight months or four. Yep.
My point is also along the same lines for documentation. For the 6 hours of documentation course, is that a standard? Because it seems like one of the big focuses that I'm not sure that Mr. Lane understands is the documentation. And so I would think that 6 hours would not be enough in terms of that course. And that should be extended, especially because of a lot of the items fit with that. So I would propose twice that.
So I'm really torn on the documentation. And the reason I think it's familiar to all the members of the board, I see this as a structural problem at this company. And it seems like that's kind of the habit there. I'm concerned about the care in this case. I'm concerned about the documentation in this case. I think my goal in voting with these motions is to create an opportunity for this gentleman to become a very good physical therapist in the area of pediatrics and treating this very, very sensitive population. I know we've talked multiple times about having these concerns about these kind of company-wide standards that seem to be problematic, and I don't know that that excuses much of the violations here, because at the end of the day, this is a profession, and you're responsible for your own actions, whether there's a corporate policy one way or the other. But I'd be curious what other members of the board think on that. On that front, because that's kind of the reason that I see that the documentation as maybe 6 hours will be enough, because I wonder if maybe that's why the documentation was the way it was. I don't know, but that's kind of the thought process that I'm having right now.
Mr. Bart, my thoughts on that is that if we have an individual in the company that is obviously known to have this, is public. And so my thought with that is that if we have more documentation time, perhaps you could be somewhat of a role model for others within the company, and others might go to him in terms of what he learned from the whole process, and potentially then the company has a change and are nudged into changing the way that things are done.
Well, and I suspect we'll do a fair amount of that as we as I suspect we will investigate some of the other physical therapists who were involved here.
Have opened more complaints based on this, so you will be seeing some of the same documentation type again.
Yes, and so I guess I understand that, Dr. Hyken. I think the only thing I want to make sure of is I don't just because this is the first, right? I don't want to make Dr. Lane kind of I don't want to make him feel like he's being the example, right, being made of. I want to make sure we're dealing with his care individually. And that may be 12 hours may be sufficient for that, right? But I see that concern. So that's kind of where I stand on that front.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, in light of kind of this discussion, one option that may address it is requiring Mr. Lane to take the continuing education and record keeping in a shorter period of time, and then start the monitoring after that, so the monitor can see if anything that he learned during the seminar transferred to practice. And that's a way to kind of monitor his record keeping and making sure that it's improved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bill, historically, to Mr. Harris's point, when the board has requested external monitoring, it's a monthly review, and then the documentation coursework takes place first, then the monitoring happens after that to ensure, just to Mr. Harris's point, that there's some integration of what is learned to what is happening now in clinical practice.
Yeah.
Yes. So you may wish to consider monthly instead of every other month?
Yep. I actually would like to propose that if we could kind of, since we're talking about the details of it, I would like to propose monthly monitoring for at least 8 months. Because I suspect, you know, Mr. Martin, that the supervision issues are more of a company process. But the documentation of providing an evaluation and standardized tests and writing goals around that is at the core. That's core of what we do as a physical therapist. And there's not any documentation system that can limit, for the most part, or should limit our ability to do what we do best, which is evaluate, determine impairments, areas of opportunity for physical therapy to impact this patient, write a plan of care and treatment and goals, and then monitor as they go. So, and there's just a big gap in a lot, almost all of his documentation, that there's just no circular connection between what he's saying and what the PTA is saying and how he's just reassessing that. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there for him.
I agree. I've been very concerned about this case, you know, as we've looked at it. And so I think that would seem appropriate to me.
Okay.
That also addresses my point. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So let's do the 6 hours of documentation. We'll do monitoring. If his monitoring isn't meeting the expectations, we'll know, we'll hear from the monitor. Is that right, Mindy? You get reports from the monitor about how he's
prepared. You would request it in the order that the monitor provide monthly reports.
Okay. But are you comfortable with that, Dr. Hayek and Mr. Burton?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And I think from some of the previous language you have said historically that the CEUs could not be used toward a renewal of the license.
Correct. Thank you for clarifying that. Mm-hmm. Judy, do you want to can you please re-summarize the motion and all the details?
Yes. First, a point of clarification. You said discipline, but you did not specify whether this is a board order or this is a consent agreement.
Sorry, I did, but it was way early in, before I should have, board order.
Okay. Okay, so your motion on the table right now is to issue a board order, which includes continuing education in the following areas, but the continuing education should be reapproved. It may be completed online, does not count towards renewal requirements, and shall be completed in the areas of pediatric continuing education for 12 hours, documentation for 6 hours, ethics for 3 hours. The probation period of this order extends for 3 years. And that time is also to successfully complete the AZ law jurisprudence examination and to be monitored by an external monitoring company on a monthly basis for a period of 8 months for 3 to 5 charts, which includes an initial evaluation and progress notes. He is eligible for early termination should all of the terms be met. And there was talk, one point of clarification in this motion so far, there was talk of requiring the documentation to be completed earlier. Is that part of your motion? Mm-hmm. What term would you like the documentation completed in?
What's reasonable, 30 days, 60 days? I'm not sure how often the course is offered. So I don't want to preclude him from an opportunity if it's not offered, and put him at risk for not being in compliance with the board order. Can you take it at any time? Is it offered on a regular basis, generally speaking?
Documentation courses are pretty standard in the online offerings. And so
I would say 30 days.
Okay.
And Ms. Chiefs, we got that the monitoring is going to be reported to us, correct? That was the other thing we added.
Yes, there's, yeah, we always request monitoring reports. Okay, so let me restate this motion. To issue Mr. Lane a board order that includes probation for 3 years, continuing education, which shall be pre-approved, may be completed online and does not count towards renewal requirements, shall be completed in the area of pediatric for 12 hours, documentation for 6 hours. That specifically is to be completed within 30 days. 3 hours of ethics. Retaking the AZ Law jurisprudence exam. Monitoring by an external monitoring company for 3 to 5 charts on a monthly basis for a period of 8 months, which will include initial evaluation and progress notes. Monthly reports are to be provided to the board by the 10th of each month. There is an ability for early termination should all of the terms of the board order be met. Does that sound accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the board, as I understand it then, you're in essence giving the professional, and this may be your intent, 3 years to take 15 hours of continuing education and pass the jurisprudence exam, the way the motion is currently crafted. Was that the board's intent to give him 3 years in which to complete that? And, of course, if he completes it earlier, you know, he can ask for early termination. Or did you want to have that continuing education completed in a shorter time frame?
Dr. King, I would defer to you, but my inclination is to give them 3 years. I think as soon as they're done, I don't know that there's a need to keep Mr. Lane on probation after that. And it's already going to last for 8 months regardless because of the monitoring.
Minimally, yeah.
I think that's a good point, though, Mr. Harrison, that he's continuing to work with pediatric patients. That sounds like that's his plan. And so I would much prefer to have him aggressively participate and complete CEUs in pediatric care if he's going to continue that practice. And so I would like to clarify that the CEU in pediatrics is completed within 6 months.
I would agree with that.
I mean, I essentially feel the same way with the jurisprudence exam.
Mm-hmm.
I would like Mr. Lane to know what those rules are, you know, as soon as possible. So I guess my mindset on this is if the idea here is, you know, once he completes everything, he can go for early termination. I don't necessarily see a need for the probationary period to be 3 years at that point. I'm almost, wanting to like reduce that down to like a year, year and a half, because we essentially want him to go through this stuff in, you know, a short time period.
My only worry is just the monitoring of 8 months. And if something happens in his life and he leaves and he can't, you know, treat for a few months, that really puts him at risk for not meeting it. So much better be like 2 years and have him complete it all early and come back to us then. Come back to us and ask for an extension because something happened and he couldn't complete it.
Well, and Dr. King, members of the board, to address your point in particular, there is standard tolling provisions in all board orders. If something in the professional's personal life prevents them from complying, the order is automatically tolled until such time as they resume practicing.
Given that, then my inclination would be to, Mr. Leone to do either an 18-month or a 12-month probation. I think if there's tolling, if there's a need, and Mr. Lane has the ability and it sounds like the interest to continue in this area of law or not law, of physical therapy, then my inclination is to give him that opportunity within 12 months. Let him move as quick as he can. Maybe say 18 just because, you know, we know stuff happens and maybe you don't get 8 straight months of monitoring right in a row.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with 18, just given that the holidays are coming up and, you know, and things like that. Patients cancel. I mean, I was in pediatrics for 25 years, you know, so.
Everybody's out of town over the holidays.
Kids get sick, holidays happen,
yeah.
You know, so I would be comfortable with 18 months.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Mr. Harris.
So, Mr. Harris, one point of clarification, please. So this motion has changed substantially. As long as Dr. King and Mr. Barton, as the motion maker and the second, are approving in these, we can just continue with this. We don't have to rescind and start over, correct?
Yes, in my understanding that the new change is just the length of probation from 3 years to 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
And to take the CEUs in a short period of time.
Right, the documentation.
And the pediatric CEUs.
Okay, and the pediatrics. Okay, thank you.
And so are we saying that all of the continuing education should be taken within 6 months? Documentation should be completed within 30 days. All of this should be completed before the monitoring is initiated.
I think the motion, if I understood Dr. Kelly correctly, the motion is that the pediatric CEUs are to be completed within 6 months, the documentation within 30 days, and the monitoring can begin after the documentation CEUs are completed 30 days later.
And this, and the ethics within 6 months, and the jurisprudence we talked about being completed within, I think we said 6 months.
And I don't know about you, Dr. King. I don't have a problem with moving the, with giving him more time on the ethics. He's going to be doing a lot of continuing education over the next year.
Yeah. So 6 months, you want longer than that?
Well, I think we just provide my inclination.
Any time.
Any time during the probationary period, you can complete the ethics.
Okay. So no time frame on completing the ethics as long as it's within the probationary period. 6 months to take the CEUs for pediatrics and retake the jurisprudence exam. 30 days to take the documentation CEU and begin monitoring. That's monthly for 8 months. For a total of 18 months of probation. Did I get that right? Okay. Does that align with what you've got in your notes, Judy?
I believe so. My notes are a little.
I'm sorry, mine too.
We're making all these amendments today to make your life really hard.
So. you're succeeding.
I appreciate the dialogue and the involvement of everyone in the board and just sharing your thoughts. And so I think that that's just really valuable to make sure we get it right for Mr. Lane.
Okay, so I think we have it now. So we are to issue a board order for 18 months of probation, continuing education, which shall be pre-approved, may be completed online, and does not count towards renewal requirements. They shall be completed in the specific time frame stated in the areas of pediatric physical therapy, 12 hours to be completed within 6 months. Documentation, 6 hours to be completed within 30 days. Ethics, 3 hours to be completed within the time frame of the probation. Successful completion of the AZ Law Jurisprudence Exam to be completed in the time frame of the probation. Monitoring by an external company to begin after the documentation coursework. And the pediatrics coursework, or just the documentation?
just the documentation, and I think, and Judy, I think, but just by way of point of order, I think the motion was that the jurisprudence exam was within 6 months.
Okay. More time. 15th time is the charm. So it's been moved and seconded to issue a board order for probation of 18 months. Continuing education, which shall be pre-approved, may be completed online and does not count towards the renewal requirements. It shall be completed in the stated timeframes in the areas of pediatric physical therapy, 12 hours to be completed within 6 months. Documentation, 6 hours to be completed within 30 days. Ethics to be completed within the time frame of the probation. AZ Law jurisprudence exam to be completed within 6 months. Monitoring by an external monitoring company to be initiated after the completion of the documentation continuing education. To cover 3 to 5 charts on a monthly basis for a period of 8 months. And to include initial evaluations and progress notes. The monitor is to provide the board with reports on a monthly basis by the 10th of the month. And there is an ability for early termination should all the terms of the board order be met. Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Sorry, that was complicated. Thank you all. And Mr. Lane, the administrators from the board will be in touch with you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for being on the call as well, Mr. Sloan.
Thank you.
All right, with that, we take a break.
Yes. Thank you.
Let's stop recording. Let's take a 5-minute break, please. Stand, stretch, get some coffee, do what you need to do. And we will reconvene, let's say, 10:50.
Okay. We're stopping the recording at 10:43 to be reconvened at 10:50.